on this episode of The Kinked Wire.
My guess take-home point here is that by no means is staffing for a stroke program a small undertaking, so it really is important to have the support from the hospital as well as other medical specialties when developing the interventional stroke program, which we're very fortunate we have.
Welcome to The Kinked Wire, the interventional radiology podcast from SIR's IR Quarterly magazine. You can learn more at our website, sirweb.org/kinkedwire. In this episode, Kinked Wire host Warren Krakow speaks with interventional radiologist Eric Wang about how he got involved in ischemic stroke care, the specialized training other IRs need to do the same, and how SIR supports the IR community in this important effort.
I'd really like to thank you for being here with us today. Going to have a really great and exciting conversation. I believe you're the first neurointerventionalist to be speaking with us today, so no pressure, but tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, just for a minute or two, how you got started into, you know, doing neurointerventions and, you know, what brought you into that field.
Thanks, Warren. So just a brief background about myself. So my fellowship training is in vascular interventional radiology, and I'm currently one of 15 IRs at a very large subspecialized radiology practice, so Charlotte Radiology. So several years ago, there became a need at our large comprehensive stroke center for another interventionalist to join the stroke call team. This was definitely an additional commitment on top of the regular IR call that we take at a busy level one trauma center, but I really saw this as a great opportunity to expand upon my skill sets in an area that I've had an interest in ever since my residency years at UCLA. I remember how excited everyone was in the early 2000s when the interventional neuroradiology department at UCLA started the first clinical trials in the U.S. using the Mercy clot extraction device. I don't know if you remember that, Warren, but
yeah,
it's a cork type device for pulling out these clots. So my wife and I have also had a close friend who experienced a stroke at a young age and benefited from a stroke thrombectomy procedure. So I've seen firsthand how devastating large vessel stroke occlusions can be and how important it is to be able to extract that clot immediately. I was really fortunate because I actually had on-the-job training for interventional stroke procedures at our main comprehensive stroke center. We have a great collaborative relationship with our neurosurgical colleagues, so I really benefited from training internally with an experienced neurointerventional surgeon, an interventional radiologist, as well as a neuroradiologist. So in addition to a bunch of CMEs specific for acute stroke intervention and management, I spent about a year being proctored through as many interventional stroke cases as possible, and really just getting proficient with literature and the risks and benefits in stroke patient selection for intervention. And I just never realized when I first started that our volumes would have escalated where it is now. And it was late 2014, I'd say early 2015, when there were several key interventional stroke trials that came about, Mr. Clean, Escape, Extend 1A, Swift Prime, Revascat, they all had cool little funky names. And even more recently, just a couple years ago, in 2018, the Diffuse 3 and Dawn trials extended the stroke thrombectomy window from 6 hours to up to 16 and 24 hours. So all of a sudden, stroke interventions became an area of need for both our hospital system as well as the patients in our surrounding community. So it really was ideal that myself and several of my IR partners were able to be trained up and become actively involved in our program. Our stroke thrombectomy volumes have increased, I think, close to 1,300% since 2013 over this time period.
Oh, wow. That's really something. That's amazing. So now, are you still doing regular IR as well?
I am. My primary clinical role is as a clinical interventional radiologist. Our practice is large, as I mentioned, and our IRs cover 6 core hospitals, which includes a level one trauma center in the Charlotte metropolitan area. But we also split up into 2 separate IR call teams due to the volume of on-call cases and the distance between our respective hospital sites. So I'm on call quite a bit, which is fine because I really do enjoy the breadth and complexity of our IR cases. So stroke work for the IRs in our practice that do it is additional on top of the IR that we're doing.
Correct me if I'm wrong, are you doing the stroke work only out of the one major academic center you're talking about?
We have 2 stroke intervention sites. So for one of our stroke sites, the interventional team consists of a couple interventional neurosurgeons, a couple interventional radiologists, including myself and a neuroradiologist. And then at our second interventional stroke hub, we call it, where we do over 100 cases a year also, The stroke interventionists are all body trained IRs.
Wow, that's impressive. So you mentioned the team, it sounds like a multidisciplinary environment, which is great. But how about on the sort of hospital side or the support side? I would suspect or gather that you need a lot of infrastructure support. What kind of stuff do you have in place and how'd you do that?
That's a great question. And I think it really is important to have the support of the hospital in order to appropriately staff for a successful stroke program. I'm fortunate that our hospital system and the leadership values and supports the program and has committed a fairly comprehensive list of hospital personnel to support the program. And that number has only grown as our interventional stroke volumes have increased. So at both of our stroke center hospital sites, we have dedicated stroke program coordinators, stroke navigators. And since we feel that it's important to have this multidisciplinary approach for our stroke patients, we actually have designated stroke program MD champions for multiple departments. That includes neurology, the ED, hospitalists, critical care, as well as our interventionist team. And then the hospital system also staffs with clinical analysts and data abstractors. We have a lead ER physician who does a great job as a medical director for the Carolina Stroke Network, which encompasses many different hospital and freestanding ER sites across several different counties in two states. And then one of our neuroradiologists is the medical director of the Neurosciences Institute. We also have neurology and neurosurgery directors who oversee the cerebrovascular division of the Neurosciences Institute. And our private radiology practice has a dedicated stroke admin liaison also. I guess take-home point here is that by no means is staffing for a stroke program a small undertaking. So it really is important to have the support from the hospital as well as other medical specialties when developing the interventional stroke program, which we're very fortunate we have.
I think we're seeing that more and more, programs, at other places, transplant places, for example, where they have big hepatobiliary or TIPS programs are reaching out across silos and they've got hepatologists involved, PE programs, there's pulmonary critical care folks involved. We've heard about these PE response teams. Is that sort of the same idea? You've got like a stroke team?
Absolutely. And you mentioned the transplants and in our center, we have that type of multidisciplinary approach to our liver work and the cancer work. And yes, as with acute PE and code STEMIs, with acute stroke, large vessel occlusions, being able to immediately engage multiple specialties to coordinate the clinical care of patients can have a really positive impact on patient outcomes. So having an organized code stroke team is essential in our efforts to continuously reduce the time lag between patient arrival and initiation of treatment. And that includes both the administration of IVTPA as well as performing the actual stroke thrombectomy cases for the large vessel occlusions. So EMS and ER is frontline for the initial assessment. So it's good that we have a stroke program physician ER champion who's passionate and fantastic right. as the medical director for Carolina Stroke Networks. And that has really, really helped in recognizing and prioritizing stroke patients at the onset with the evaluating the EMS paramedics and the ER physician teams. And we also have key members of our stroke team that include the stroke neurologist and the stroke advanced practice provider, as well as a stroke navigator. And for us, we always have an in-house neuroradiologist who prioritizes and reads out that CTA and CT perfusion study immediately. And then, of course, there's the stroke interventionist and the team members that I mentioned previously.
So at what point in the process is the stroke team, quote, activated? In other words, a patient comes in with symptoms in the ER, have they already been put on alert by EMS? Or is it the radiologist on call reading the head CT and the stroke perfusion? How does it work at that level?
It all depends on how the patient makes their way to our hospital. If through EMS and the fast stroke assessment is positive, then there has been prior notification as the ambulance is en route. So the ER physician and our stroke neurology team meets the patient immediately upon arrival to the hospital for assessment as the patient is being rushed to a CT scanner. Now, sometimes the patient presents directly to the ER. Perhaps a family member brought the patient in. So then the ER triage staff has been trained to recognize these stroke patients so they're prioritized and seen by the ER physician as soon as possible. Then the patient is fast-tracked for assessment by the stroke neurology team and then taken to the CT suite. Once the patient is at the CT scanner, as I mentioned previously, we have neuroradiologists in-house 24/7, so they prioritize and call the stroke neurology team of all relevant findings even before dictating the final report. So this is definitely prioritization of our neuroradiologists. If there is a stroke large vessel occlusion, the neurology team and the interventionist will then review the case and the patient's clinical presentation, and then we make a decision on whether the patient is a thrombectomy candidate based upon our endovascular treatment guidelines. If they are, it's up to me or one of the other interventionalists to activate our IR stroke team so that we're ready when the patient is rushed to the IR suite for us to do the stroke thrombectomy procedure. Now, a large part of our interventional stroke volume actually comes from transfers from peripheral hospitals and ERs, and the stroke team activation differs for those patients. One of the key distinguishing features in our program is that we have a large team of over a dozen telestroke nurses who are available around the clock for these peripheral focal sites via direct video feed to help with the on-site medical team patient stroke assessment, IVTPA dosing and administration if necessary, and then quite importantly, the activation of our code stroke team with a physician connection line, tying in the stroke neurologist and the interventionalist, as well as MedCenter Air to help facilitate a quick transfer for the stroke patient to our hub hospital IR suite.
That's great. There's multiple triggering pathways, you know, like you said, depending upon how the patient presents or comes in. Some thoughts that may be going through people's mind, because I think there's a lot of interest in this, particularly among people like yourself who were interventionalists and, you know, maybe wanted to bring something additional to their department or hospital. But, you know, we started to talk about this. You're doing IR stuff, you're doing stroke stuff, you're doing cough or both. Do you have diagnostic responsibilities as well?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think every radiologist or IR is going to have different responsibilities depending on the scope and scale of their practice and hospital system. At least within our program, all the IRs still have some diagnostic radiology responsibilities in between their cases and a few times each month assigned to imaging shifts. So the IRs, at least within our practice, have still stayed pretty competent in multimodality approach for radiology.
Wow, that's a lot on your plate, but that's commendable and that's great. So you, it sounds like, went through a somewhat rigorous and formal education in terms of getting up to speed on stroke interventions and, you know, making sure you knew what to do. What do you think about folks who want to set things up in, you know, their own community hospital or, you know, if, you know, particularly, I don't know, if they're in a rural hospital, do you think they need dedicated training? I mean, to me, these are fairly sophisticated interventions and the, you know, the tissue beds in which you're working are pretty unforgiving.
It would be very difficult to set things up on your own at a smaller hospital without having some formal training. I think that because of the acute nature of strokes, it's not like the oncology cases where you have time to review a case with someone, right, think about it for a while for the case next week or the following day, etc. It needs to be kind of on the spot decision making, and everything's tracked in regards to how quickly you can get the procedure done from the time the patient shows up at their ER. So that would be difficult. I think there's something to be said about having training guidelines. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of a year ago, SIR put together training guidelines for endovascular stroke treatments. And that was the published in JBIR in late 2019. And they put together a nice diverse writing committee, which I thought was ideal because the authors represented both academic and community practices with mixed volumes and varied fellowship training backgrounds, which included neurosurgery, vascular neurology, neurointerventional radiology, interventional radiology, and also dual fellowship trained IR and neurointerventional physicians. And the guidelines were tough, but I think they're fair. My understanding is that there were compromises made as there were physicians who thought that some of the final training requirement numbers should be lower, but there are also others who wanted them much higher. So the training guidelines does a good job prioritizing three main components for neurointerventional training. The first is going to be the cognitive aspect of things, which is the imaging competence for CTs, MRIs, CTA, CT perfusion, and also the diagnostic catheter angiograms and recognizing what's there. The second is clinical competence with understanding stroke syndromes, the stroke scales, the clinical presentation and clinical management, including how to deal with periprocedural complications and also the pharmacological agents used in stroke care. And lastly was that technical component and the skill sets to have competence in doing the cerebral diagnostic angiographies and revascularization procedures, as well as super selective microcatheter access. So those three components are really, really essential for IRs to be involved in interventional stroke cases and achieve optimal outcomes. And it would be very difficult to achieve that on your own at a rural hospital unless you had a good mentorship program, which, again, I feel very fortunate that we happen to have that on site and a good collaborative relationship with our neurosurgery colleagues also. But it requires some undertaking and a commitment, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And you've mentioned it a couple times, and I think it's so critical that you have this collaborative relationship with your neurosurgeons, for example. What do you see going forward? I mean, it sounds like you're in a very fortunate position where you've been, but I would think that you pretty much are going to need to rely closely on your neurosurgical colleagues.
Yeah, so we as a specialty have to work on it too, and not just depend on our neurosurgical colleagues. And, you know, even though body IRs currently performing stroke thrombectomies have a solid foundation in clinical background and image interpretation, as well as that skill set, as you're well aware, with catheters and microcatheters consistently performing complex vascular cases, there are some leaders in other specialties who have openly challenged and tried to exclude IRs from performing acute ischemic stroke interventions. And the Joint Commission Technical Advisory Panel for Stroke is still working on determining the training eligibility requirements of the operators. And we are hopeful that this will not exclude the highly qualified IRs who have been performing stroke thrombectomy safely and successfully over many years, and allow also for a pathway for new IRs to be involved. I know due to COVID-associated volume decreases, JCO establish a moratorium on the stroke thrombectomy volume requirements for reaccreditation at hospital sites and is allowing for reduced volume, at least through Q1 of this year. But the moratorium doesn't extend to volumes necessary for initial accreditation. So it is really important for interventional radiologists currently performing stroke thrombectomy cases to stay up to date on the literature, the techniques, and the devices available. And they also need to make sure that they have excellent outcomes data. That outcomes data is key, and it needs to compare favorably to national standards. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should unless you're doing it right. Yeah, and we've done that with our data. We've looked at our data. We've extracted the data for our interventional radiologists, and we've compared our data to the Hermes data set, which was a meta-analysis of the key kind of stroke thrombectomy trials I mentioned in 2014, 2015. SIR has this active stroke strategy advisory committee, and there are leaders within this committee who are advising the IR residency curriculum working group. And this working group has advised on including stroke education and training as part of the required national IR residency curriculum. So in the past, stroke imaging workup, the management, and the technical procedural skills for stroke intervention was not part of most IR training programs. It wasn't part of mine, that's for sure. But Warren, I'm not sure if you experienced that through your training.
I spent a few weeks, mostly because I wanted to, with the neurointerventional folks, but no. And I certainly don't feel like I took enough time to be able to do stroke interventions on my own. No way.
Hopefully, I think with some implementation into the IR residency curriculum, there will at least be a training pathway for new IR trainees to, if not attained, at least come closer to achieving those rigorous training requirements as outlined by the SIR guidelines. And SIR just needs to continue working on this, and they have, and they realize that's important to look out for future trainees as well as the current IRs that are already out there. And they've done a great job with ongoing education training for established IRs. There's always a day-long stroke course at the annual scientific meeting, which this past year, because of COVID, was converted to like a SIR webinar instead.
Right.
And also within the last couple of years, SIR also put together a nice comprehensive two-day stroke imaging bootcamp series. So SIR and some stroke leaders are working on this, and it's important as a society as well as a field to be proactive also.
I think that's right. And I think it's important to point out all the ways that SIR has been helping with this. And, you know, I think there's a lot of excitement among interventional radiologists to be able to provide this service, as you put it, once appropriately trained. And I don't think anyone would argue with that, you know, but to be able to provide this service to their patients and to their communities. Our closing question for the year, and we'll ask it of all our guests, is, if you weren't an interventional radiologist or a stroke interventional radiologist, what would you be and why?
In medical school, I actually had a really difficult time deciding on which field to go into. I was really interested in surgery and OBGYN. And it wasn't until I fairly late in my clinical electives that I stumbled upon IR as a specialty that I proceeded down my current career path. Because of my interest in surgery OBGYN, I was trying to decide on the prelim clinical year, and one of my advisors said, hey, if you're still interested in OBGYN, why don't you do that year in OBGYN? I said, is that really possible? I said, all right, well, he's like, yeah, we'll find you a good spot. For my clinical year, prelim year before my residency, I was able to match and do an internship year at Cornell for OBGYN, for which I am forever grateful, because I had this crazy, crazy busy, fantastic year getting a nice mix of both medicine and surgery. So, and because of that year, my wife's OBGYN felt comfortable letting me deliver both of our children, which was amazing and has got to be pretty unique for any physician, especially an interventional radiologist.
That's certainly very impressive. And I really appreciate you taking the time today, really filling us in on a real emerging field among us interventional radiologists and ways that we can help our patients and our communities in all kinds of different ways we never even thought about.
Always enjoy talking about our stroke program. It's truly one of the most exciting areas of our IR clinical practice today. And I know myself and all of our IR partners are really thankful that we're involved in this area.
That was Dr. Eric Wang talking about the role of interventional radiologists in the treatment of ischemic stroke. We thank Dr. Wang for his time and you for listening to the Kink Wire. Our host is Dr. Warren Krakow. Our editor is Dr. Jamin Shaw. Our manager is Dr. Jason Fisher. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any thoughts or ideas for us, drop us a line at irq@sirweb.org.